Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, season 6, episode 28. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
And we're also joined by Hamuel Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And Jonathan's a little under the weather.
I feel like my hello there kids got like really creepy there for a second with my deep,
hello,
sick voice.
Hello there, children.
Hello, stepdad. Have you ever been to sea, Billy? No. So Jonathan's got a bit of a throat issue going on today. So we'll see how much chatting he's doing today. Anyway, so we have our fact check to start off with. We were talking about Sherlock Holmes last week, and I was talking about British television in general, and he said that Sherlock Holmes, it had 4 seasons with 3 episodes each. Yeah, they were 2 hours long, if I remember. Like, they were longer than double length of most shows. That was one of the exceptions. Between season 3 and season 4, they aired The Abominable Bride special episode on TV, and it was also in theaters. So each episode was more or less 90 minutes, he says. Yeah, so I mean, like, you know, when I say an hour, I mean like 45 minutes, because you have to calculate time for commercials, right? And if you don't have commercials, it ends up being looking shorter. But yeah, because I think Sherlock Holmes is one of the exceptions to the 6 episodes per season rule for British TV. Like, for instance, like Luther, the example I mentioned was 6 one-hour episodes, I think. Oh no, I have to fact check that now. All right, and I'll read out this one here. We're kind of wondering, Mike McMahon, the showrunner for Lower Decks, posted a couple of things this week saying that this may in fact be, or he's trying to not have it be, the last season of Lower Decks, or season 5, I believe, is going to be. What are we now? We're in 4? We're in 4, yeah.
Currently 4, and he's talking about they're in production for 5.
Yeah, and I think he in the post, he says things like, you know, it's a strange times and things are, you know, moving fast and everything's changing. And so, yeah, as I think every you know, recovering from, notwithstanding the strikes and things like that, actors are still on strike, by the way, as we record. But yeah, so concerns. Any thoughts on that, Jaime?
I don't know what it means to have sort of a full series run in the modern era. You know, if you go back to, you know, the original series, it didn't have 7 seasons. It was famously cut off early. And then TNG sort of set the standard with that, had 7. Deep Space Nine had 7. Voyager had 7. People look at Enterprise as being ended early, and it was at, was it 4 seasons, I think?
Yep. Yeah, it wasn't very, very popular, yeah.
So then you come back to this modern era where Discovery is ending at 5, with the upcoming 5th season. And I think that's probably an okay number, given where Discovery itself happens to be. So if Lower Decks ended at 5, it wouldn't be unprecedented in the modern era. So So what I'm getting at is, like, sure, would I love to have it be a more TNG style for Lower Decks of seven seasons? If that's what they planned out, it's kind of a show that works pretty well for seven seasons, given it's an homage to that era. It would make sense. But I would also not be surprised if five was sort of the, yeah, this is where modern streaming says it ends and then something new takes its place. So I do agree with his point that, like, yes, you should absolutely be vocal with your fandom, watch the show when it comes out. Otherwise, you end up with the very strange situation of Prodigy of, like, well, they made two, but they only aired one, and we have no clue when or where the second season is coming out.
Mm-hmm. And is it a full season, do we know?
The season two? I believe so.
Oh, but it's not going to see the light of day. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody really knows, right? It's kind of like stuck in limbo.
The funny part is there's going to end up being more episodes of shows like Enterprise just because they were doing 22 per as opposed to 12, 13, right? So even though that's going to be considered a shorter run, only four seasons, it's going to end up with more episodes.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that one. Well, speaking of Star Trek too, Todd Sashwick, who plays Captain, what's his name again? That guy, you know.
Is it Shaw?
Shaw, Captain Shaw, thank you. And he was also, like one of the bad guys in the 12 Monkeys as well. He posted on Twitter that he'd had, you know, when he was, I'll read what he says here. So when I was six, my first action figures were Star Trek Captain Kirk. And 49 years later, he is now a star or an action figure. And there's a really cool site called XO-6 or XO-6. And there's a whole series of characters. He posted a picture of his character. But, like, you know, right now they're taking pre-orders on Lieutenant Savick from Wrath of Khan. They've got a Picard pre-order. They've done they've got the Voyager crew coming out now too. So, and there's a Lower Deck set as well. So there's quite a few characters that they're doing. They're really, like, you know, lifelike with actual clothing, you know, and pips and stuff like that. So pretty cool collector series.
Pretty well done. Like, I'm a little curious how they did these, because, you know, for the modern cast, I think they tend to do a lot of 3D scanning, not just for this sort of thing, but you can use the same thing to make these really highly textured models that look, you know, really on key. But, like, there's no way Lieutenant Savick is going to have a 3D model, right? So how much it looks like Kirstie Alley is, like it's really spot on, and I'm impressed with that.
But do you remember the Steve Jobs figures that some company was going to make, and I think Apple ended up quashing them, but mm-hmm. they had in a very life cycle looked just like him, kind of thing, right? So
it's getting way better than the vague reference material you might have gotten if you were like me as a child and had the Star Trek The Next Generation toys. Like, I'm talking the first run toys. They were A little dodgy in the build quality.
So I have a few of those original TNG figures right here on my desk.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, they were kind of, I think it was like, you know, like, I think it was like the 60-40 rule as opposed to the 80-20 rule. They kind of were just good enough, right? So it's not until we get into, like, series now where, I think now that we've got, you know, high def and Blu-ray and all that kind of stuff, people expect a higher quality, right? So, because even the stuff that comes out now on the Hasbro stuff is quite good, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whereas back in the day, I'm sure they probably just recycled characters and put different stormtrooper outfits on them and stuff.
Yeah, there's some really cool high-end action figures now. You can get the super high-end, the ones that cost like a grand a piece, but they're amazing. They look like they were captured a life-size person and miniaturized them. It's creepy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. You see them at comic shops too all the time, different characters and even characters out of comic books and stuff like that. Kind of statues.
Yep.
Cool. All right. I mean, you got something here about Chuck?
Yeah. So this is a continuation of things. You know, traditions are very challenging when they have to change. And for a very long time, the Charlie Brown holiday movies have been aired on broadcast television. So It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, and a Charlie Brown Christmas, sort of the crown jewel of that, has been on Apple TV Plus since way back in 2020. And this year, they'll be doing a very similar thing where those are on Apple TV Plus, but they are giving free service for a limited time around each of those dates. So If you're in the Halloween mood for October 21st and 22nd, that will be available for free, whether you're a current Apple TV Plus subscriber or not. The Thanksgiving special is the 18th and 19th of November, and the Christmas special is the 16th and 17th of December. So I know some folks are kind of unhappy that it's not on their favorite broadcast channel. It is still free. It is one of those things where technically this makes it available for longer than normal, because it would normally be, you know, like 6 p.m. Well, yeah. on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And now you have a 2 full days. So
and people can get like they can get like this running without having to have an Apple TV account. Is that the
I think they're doing it like the Friday night baseball that they did during the Major League Baseball season.
Where did they?
Yeah, here's this thing that you can watch for free, regardless of whether or not you have an Apple TV Plus account. Clearly in the spirit of, and then we want you to keep subscribing, right?
Yeah.
And they've got some other specials here that I mentioned, the Velveteen Rabbit, Frog and the Toad, and a new Shape Island special. I'm sure those will be nice, but the crown jewel here for people is continuing that tradition of Charlie Brown holiday specials, which as a quick callback to one of my choices many moons ago now for the Strange Planet series on Apple TV Plus, I finally realized after seeing this, and I was like, oh yeah, that's the vibe that reminds me of. Strange Planet is basically Charlie Brown in terms of vibe. Like, you wouldn't binge watch Charlie Brown, right? Like, that's bananas. But it's very comforting and soothing. It's kind of low-key, low-paced. If you're into the Charlie Brown kind of vibe, you probably will watch Strange Planet for folks really? Who are looking for a good analogy. That's why I feel like it didn't do very well for me to watch like 3 episodes in a row when they opened up the series. But watching, you know, 20 minutes once a week, perfect vibe for that sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't sat down and watched that. I keep seeing it come up as a trailer as I finish a series or whatever.
Take one, you know, here and there, like a snack, like a peppermint, instead of like binge eating peppermints.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Jaime. I think it's a good show, but it should not be watched in one go.
No. Too intense?
No, it's just, it's quirky, but it's its own sort of sense of humor. I think we watched a couple in a row once and we were like, no.
Mm.
Yeah, right. It's like an after dinner mint. You don't want to gorge yourself on them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Cool. All right, and then this last story Jonathan's posted here is a Star Wars Firefly costume designer has passed away. Shauna Tripic did various costumes for Star Wars, and like I said, Star Wars, and how she didn't look very old.
56.
Yeah, that's pretty young.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Sad to see somebody go. The costume designs I've liked from things like Mandalorian and I think Ahsoka's have been pretty good. Give us something different for the Ahsoka character, Baylan and Shin and stuff. Like, they're all something different than the traditional Jedi vibes.
Yeah. Interesting. It's sad news. All right. On that sad note, we'll move on to the main event, which is Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 6, Parth Ferengi's Heart Place. Okay. What are your elevator pitches?
I'll go with mine, which is, let's ship the Federation and the Ferengi and also ship Tandy and Rutherford.
That's good. I went to the Ferengi Rules of Acquisition for my pitch. Ferengi Rule of Acquisition number 92, there are many paths to profit.
Yeah, I was going to look for one of those Rules of Acquisition myself. So, cool. I didn't really have one, but yeah, it's typical. I've got to check out the fine print, you know? So.
Yeah.
And the love of baseball.
It was fun. We haven't really gotten much Ferengi outside of DS9. You know, we got obviously like one episode in Enterprise. We haven't really gotten much otherwise from the Ferengi in the last number of years. So it was nice to like really get deep. We got to see Rom and Lita again. Mm-hmm. It was fun to check in and the Ferengi greed jokes never get tired. Especially, you know, they were funny on DS9, but they're really funny when they just lean right into them on a show like this.
Yeah. Right. And just Grand Nagus Rom, right?
Yes. So those are arguably the Easter egg hunts that I immediately noticed. The, mm-hmm. you know, Rom is still Grand Nagus and Lita is still around. So that's good. They've not been taken out by competitors, but it kind of makes sense given sort of Quark's sort of grand success that he's had post DS9 era, that we do see into Star Trek Picard, that he's got like franchises everywhere sort of thing. So a little bit of nepotism doesn't hurt in both the real world and in the Ferengi world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can drill into the Easter eggs, or we can do best pew pew, but yeah, cause I had Grand Negus Rom right off the top as my Easter egg as well.
Yep. I'm guessing you all picked up the USS Tirana.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, was that a Parliament class ship as well? I did not look back to see if it was like the Vancouver that we'd seen before.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
I'm gonna call it one. Would make sense.
I'm going to call it one, but then is there inevitably going to be fact check that tells me that no, it's actually something different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Keen does pay attention. Yeah. So dumb cop, reasonable cop. I've forgotten what the reference to that is, but that was, what was that one?
Oh, that was the game they were playing, right? When they were trying to trick the Admiral, when Leeta and Rom were trying to trick the Admiral into opening up the negotiations to include even more stuff, they were playing Dumb Cop, Reasonable Cop.
Yeah, because Rom was pretending to like baseball and not understand contracts and stuff, but when in fact he and Leeta were manipulating the whole situation, right?
So. Yep. Yeah, it was fun hearing Max Gradenchik again being Rom, as that sort of funny, deep voice he's got, and Rom, he's just so funny, and you know, having him just goof on baseball for 20 minutes while Leeta does all the talking is very funny.
Yeah, and then of course when the crew is sent down to review Ferenginar, you know, like a sort of a tourist, what do you call it, tourist duty or something like that, tour guide duty, and Rutherford and Tendi get cast as a honeymooning couple. And which, of course, is, you know, plays along the whole will they, won't they kind of, you know, vibe that we have with those two, right? Yep. I thought for a minute there they would, but no, they backed it off and tried to get out of it, but then they found out what the consequence of getting out of it is, and they survived.
Yeah. Well, that would jump ahead to my big question, you know, are they really into each other, or are they just like the absolute best of friends?
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of like, it's like one of those things where in cartoon world, comic world, right? You know, Bart Simpson never gets old, right? He never grows up, right? He never gets any older than he is. So, I mean, kind of, I think in those sense, that sense, they'd always just sort of be like, they would be rendered as, you know, very into each other, but not, you know, the two of them strike me as not wise enough to know that they're into each other, right? You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. The character designs did look like they were blushing rather than sort of confused or weirdly embarrassed. So they're sort of teasing us, and they've been teasing us on this concept for, you know, pretty much most of the run. We'll see what they end up doing, if anything, around this particular theme, because having them in the Jeffries tube at the end, like right on top of each other, breathing right in each other's face, is in a, you know, a non-romantic sense. It just, another tease back to like, will they, won't they, that you mentioned.
Yeah. I think definitely we're supposed to realize that they're into each other, but they don't realize it. Right? I think that's the sort of the character of those two together, right?
Which is exactly why we need season 5 and 6.
Yeah. To find out what's going on with those two. Hmm. Well, 5 we might get, but
yeah.
Easter eggs.
I had a couple more Easter eggs. Yeah. I saw in the credits, and I definitely picked it out when that opening scene. So we've been having these sort of guest appearances, and they're doing those opening scenes with the different races getting attacked by the mystery ship. And one of the voices jumped off the screen to me. It was Dave Foley, Canada's own, of course, Dave Foley from Kids in the Hall and News Radio, was one of the Ferengis on that ship that gets blown up at the beginning. That was a funny little cameo. Some of the stuff that was just up when they were, you know, in the background during the Ferenginar scenes, Uncle Quark's youth casino stuck out as a very funny gag. I also like the recurring Sluggo Cola jokes, including, you know, oh my gosh, they even put commercials in the actual episodes, and then they show the Paramount logo over top of Boimler. That was very funny. Yeah, it was the perfect place for a sense of humor show.
Well, and then of course they're in Loeb's lounge, you know, because the Loebs are the big, and I think at one point when Mariner is on her drinking binge with her friend, she's got like the foam Ferengi ears over her head with the bottles on either side.
Yeah.
We had the Genesis device, or the mini version of the Genesis device.
The very modern version of it. It's the new USB-C version of the Genesis device, apparently.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. And they were working on the self-sealing stem bolts at one point too, right? Which is the Ember Nog and
Jake.
Jake had this big scheme to get all these self-sealing stem bolts. So they were having trouble with the sealing part of the show, right? So I thought cool.
Yep.
And the rules of acquisition generally were all kinds of Easter eggs, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, it definitely carried over into the quotes, too.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things in terms of, I guess, an Easter egg that goes into one of my big questions. So Quark's Federation Experience Bar and Grill is basically Star Trek The Experience that used to be in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And then at that, you could hear what appears to be in-scene music. It's not, you know, music for us beyond the fourth wall. You could hear the Star Trek The Motion Picture and Star Trek The Next Generation theme playing in the background. So is that now canonically that music exists in universe?
Interesting.
That's a good pull. That's a good pull.
Yeah, I was like, it's playing so low that it's not playing for us. It's playing for them. It's background music, right?
Well, did you know that the theme, like at the very end, the credit scene in the Star Trek Motion Picture, right, is the theme song from The Next Generation?
Yeah. So being inclusive, I said, you know, both of these, although for me, it's the TNG theme.
No, that's what I mean. Like I what was it? 70 something, 77, 78, just came out after Star Wars. Right. So, you know, and then we tried not to watch it for like at least 10 years. And then, you know, The Next Generation came out. So they rolled out that same theme song. None of us, I don't think anybody else really, unless you were a super fan, caught that, right? So at the time, it sounded familiar, but not quite, you know what I mean? Anyway, so we got some quotes here. Do you want me to read them off?
Yes, go for it.
Starfleet's going to foot the bill for us to go to as many bars, restaurants, bars, hotels, pubs, bars, saloons, cantinas, and bars, as we want. That's Mariner talking about the tour guide duty, I guess. We'll also need someone to act as a couple. And since the Cerrito is statistically the horniest and least romantically committed crew in Starfleet, we have no married officers on board. That's from Ransom. That's how he ends up getting Tendi and Rutherford assigned to that role. Madam, please, I'm trying to enjoy a nice evening out with my biker gang, says the Ferengi biker.
That wouldn't kill me. Madam, please.
We're trying to get into this with
Mariner and her friend. Yeah.
Yeah. And Dr. Miglimo says, you don't have to throw it twice in my mouth. Yeah, he's always about the regurgitated stuff, right? So,
yep. The most disgusting and yet earnest person on the ship.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think overall this was a nice, you know, just fun adventure. This wasn't, you know, there was no larger purpose other than to make us laugh, and it did. This was good. Mm-hmm. This is what I want from Lower Decks sometimes, just to sit and laugh at Star Trek at its funniest.
What was the remark about bringing Konos into the Federation? Was that one of the demands that they wanted at the very end?
Yeah, you bring a planet. Oh yeah, so you know how many planets you have that are, you know, owe us something? We'll definitely bring them in. It's like, no, bring this specific planet.
Yeah,
Kronos, the Klingon homeworld, into the Federation.
Yeah, and the 8 hours of Ferengi TV that Boimler ends up watching, right? So.
Yeah,
it was almost like that. Was it Rick and Morty where they have the sort of weird television shows that they watch?
Yes, the interdimensional TV, intergalactic. Yeah. I forget what they call it, but it is the wild stuff that I think this should be some very short treks in the future. I would watch the landlord cops trying to get you to sign a new lease. Very Ferengi sort of thing. For me, I definitely laughed out loud several times in the Tendi Rutherford storyline where Parth is trying to get them to fully enjoy their couple's retreat. When he's taking photos of the couple and then they're like, oh yeah, let's just move on. He's like, no problem. We'll move on to the lingerie. this like conical bra, you know, Madonna type bra, and this banana hammock. It just had me guffawing, including when they're in the bar and grill experience. And it's like, okay, you've eaten the sexy chocolate statues of each other and proclaimed things you like about each other. Now it's time to consummate your marriage right here in this box, not where we can see you, but where we can still hear you. Just nuts.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I like that the Ferengi are happy to do this as long as you are honest. If you're making things up, then it's the high crimes. You go down to the sulfur mines.
Yeah.
Yeah. They also had the big sort of like memorial wall of people who have lost profit, which is very, very Ferengi for them, which I guess gets semi-religious for them, right? Because like you're supposed to see like the person who weighs the scales, and they don't weigh, you know, your good deeds and your ill deeds. They weigh your profits, your credits versus your debits, the debits, right? And you got to be at least vaguely profitable to make it into their afterlife. So that was definitely an interesting deep cut that they put in to show Ferengi culture.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right, let's move on to Ahsoka. Star Wars Ahsoka, Part 8. The Jedi, the Witch, and the Warlord. And you got elevator pitch, Jaime?
Oh, mine for this one is arguably the elevator pitch for the entire series. I put TSB, Thrawn Strikes Back.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Same place. I had just had the Empire Strikes Back. I was going to say the new Empire Strikes Back, but yeah, it's that's exactly right, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, they were just, and it's almost like Gilligan's Island. They all get stuck at the end, at the, you know, sort of the typical Star Wars ending where they kind of just stare off into the galaxy and try to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. And I think it makes sense too. You know, I think we were a little concerned with how are they going to wrap up all the stuff that they had laid out. We knew that it was going to carry over to the next sort of series or multiple series that they're going to do. So in this case, it makes perfect sense that they would continue this, although this is the more definitive that there's going to be a second Ahsoka series, I think, than we were before.
Right. I mean, we didn't know that until this episode or the series.
Yeah, I mean, they still haven't announced there's a second Ahsoka series coming, but I think, judging where this one ends up, it would make very little sense to have this continue in, like, Mandalorian next season, or what's the other one that's coming? The one with Jude Law with the kids stranded. Skeleton Crew. Like, that doesn't make sense, right? Although that maybe that's set in the galaxy further away, too, so who knows?
Oh, best pew-pew for me.
I had Sabine YOLOing the TIE fighters, so using the wings of the ship to just crush the relatively fragile fighters. And then her quote there of, got him.
I thought I had the Ahsoka versus Morgan lightsaber versus the Sword of Talzin as my pew-pew, because I think that's one of the better lightsaber duels we've had in quite a while. You know, they seemed equally matched. There was some pretty cool martial arts stuff mixed in, some wire work and stuff. I thought that was a pretty strong piece of it wasn't exactly Duel of the Fates, but it was pretty good.
Yeah. I like the force jumping that they had to do to catch up with the ship as it had already departed.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think, was it,
Ezra. So it's Sabine helping Ezra to fly even further, right?
Yeah, and then she was supposed to follow, but you end up, spoilers if you haven't seen it, but she ends up staying on the planet with Ahsoka and Shin, right?
And Baylan.
And Baylan standing beside that big stone statue. What do you think that is?
We'll definitely be getting to that in a moment.
Okay, well, we can head to the Easter eggs now if you like.
Sure. So I had three that were all pretty important. So the Blade of Talzin, the sword that Morgan uses and is gifted by the Great Mothers. Talzin, of course, was the leader of the Night Sisters on Dathomir from the Clone Wars. And we have seen this sword before. She uses it at one point in the Clone Wars episodes. So that was a pretty interesting first time we've seen it, obviously, in live action. And it doesn't, you know, disappear or anything when she dies. So it still exists, which is interesting, too. I wonder if there's more future with that, because that's a pretty important and powerful relic. The other two are definitely huge things to build on. So the statue we see at the end, where we see Baylan standing on the arm of this statue outstretched, and out in the distance we see him seeing this beacon in the distance. The statue is of the father, so... if you search back in your memory banks to a three-part episode storyline from the Clone Wars, there's a really kind of unusual storyline that they did at one point where these three very powerful force users living on this very isolated planet draw in Anakin to test him to see if he is truly the Chosen One. And they are known as the Father, the Son, and the Daughter, or some people refer to them as the Mortis Gods. And that statue we see in this episode is the father. And the idea of them is that the son represents the dark side, the daughter represents the light side, and the father represents the balance. He is what is in between, the gray, which is where to a certain extent, Baylan is, but certainly where Ahsoka is. So the fact that on this mysterious planet so far, far away, we are seeing this representation, and that there's clearly something out there that is calling to Baylan, that is the reason why he's there, and that we are staying on this planet with Ahsoka and Sabine and Shin and Baylan to explore, I think, more of that. What is, you know, what is the Force? What makes it up? Sort of looking at that bigger storyline. Definitely worth going back before they do any more of this sort of storyline to refresh yourself with those three episodes. But I think if I, you know, we've been asking all along, well, what is it that Baylan's there for? What is it Baylan's there for? It seems like what he's getting to is the root of, you know, what is the Force and how can I, you know, either end this dark side, light side duality and, you know, get past that, or is it, you know, in just to completely get rid of the Force,
right?
So that's a pretty huge part of the storyline. There's a ton of articles that just start cropping up exploring, you know, refreshing people's memories about what the Mortis Gods are, what they did. But I, again, go back and watch those three episodes. It'll definitely give you a lot more clarity, although it is one of the most unusual Clone Wars arcs of them all. Ahsoka dies, literally dies at one point and has to be resurrected. Anakin sees his future as Darth Vader and loses his mind. It's pretty intense and weird, but it's really good. And it does speak to a really epic, very connected to the whole Star Wars mythology piece that this story is kind of building towards. And it also brings us to the other Easter egg I had in here, which is Ahsoka's Morai. So the Morai is this bird, more or less, that has, since she was resurrected on Mortis, has sort of followed her and kept watch over her and shows up in places where she belongs. When she's on the right path, the Morai shows up. And so to see her bird there at the end of this episode, when she looks off to the side and she sees the Morai, she knows she's where she belongs. And that's why she's so at peace with where she is.
Right.
So all of this is tied into not just obviously the return of Thrawn and the sort of this rise of a new empire storyline, but it's really tied into the whole Force mythology and all the big picture stuff that Dave Filoni's kind of played with through Clone Wars and Rebels and shaping up to be a very, very ambitious and big storyline.
Yeah, I think this obviously through your explanation kind of leads to leaving Hera and Ezra to deal with Thrawn while Ahsoka and Sabine and Shin and Baylan kind of deal with what's going on over here on this world, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's tricky too, because now we're also going to have Baylan as the central character who's going down this path. And of course, Ray Stevenson, who did such a wonderful job as a performer in this series, has now died. So I just don't see a way they can't recast him. It doesn't make sense really to do anything else at this point.
They wouldn't have filmed stuff already. Like,
I don't think they were doing any back-to-back season filming.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, you would need like a lot of material to really, I think, bring a proper end to his character.
I think unless they can do some AI trickery, I think the logical thing would be to just simply find someone who looks similar and pay homage to the character, as opposed to just trying to write around the fact that he's on this very important arc and is now just gone. It doesn't make any sense, really.
So what do you think is next, Remy?
Next for
this series?
That's a good question, because the larger, just building off what Jonathan said, like the larger from the, you know, more character-driven spiritual side is going to be the, on the dead planet with Ahsoka, Sabine, Shin, and Baylan. The larger from a moving bigger plot stuff around is going to be, Thrawn returning and Ezra returning and having to deal with the revival such as it is of the Empire. That's why, calling this Thrawn Strikes Back kind of works in the, like, this series as a whole fits in as the Empire Strikes Back of it. Like, the good guys don't win at the end. Right. And it ends on arguably a large cliffhanger of like what's going to happen next. So it'll be interesting to see where they go with this and how they sort of tie things in together to some of the broader pieces. Because we know where stuff sort of eventually has to go. Right. We know that the Empire can't be fully revived because it at some point needs to evolve into its successor of the First Order. For the sequel trilogy. And just like we were, every time somebody comes up, we're like, do they end up learning, attending Luke's doomed school? And we say, okay, well, Grogu, no, he is off with Mando, totally fine. Okay, so we know he lives, but like, what ends up happening to Ezra? What ends up happening to all these other folks? There's all of these bigger pieces that there's still plenty of room to fill in some of these gaps. So I was pretty pleased with this series overall of how it does things.
I think it's honestly the better for not having tried to wrap it up in 8 episodes. Like I like that it is carrying forward. I think if they had tried to put a bow on it, it was too ambitious. And, we did criticize it a little bit in the early few episodes that it was a little slow and that it was a little bit slow in developing the character. And then of course we had this great sort of arc over episodes 4, 5, and 6 that really brought Ahsoka and Sabine's characters into clarity. And then the last two episodes kind of tied up some stuff as far as, Thrawn heading back, Ezra heading back, and, what happens with Morgan. So we got a little bit of closure, but the fact that it does leave it open-ended and set up this next phase of Star Wars TV and even a movie. Now we know that they're going to do the Dave Filoni movie that comes out of this, I think is exciting. I think this is some of the best Star Wars we've seen in a while. Like, you know, that you have more than enough reason to be dubious about, you know, what was a bit of a letdown for Mandalorian season 3. I think this definitely helps reset the table a little bit for a better future.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll read the quotes off. Are you getting quotes before I read them off? I mean,
two more that I had, I guess technically three. I liked Hu Yang's, I have been teaching younglings to construct lightsabers for longer than you have been alive. Which is not only a really nice one for him to tell Ezra as like, hey, you know, young buck, I've seen a thing or two, but people online pointed out like Hu Yang was saying this because he was telling Ezra, hey, the saber emitter is too narrow. And Ezra's like, no, it's fine. I totally like it this way, which apparently addresses a meta thing that went on and Rebels came out of, like, people feeling the design of the lightsabers was just a little too skinny in that show, which I can see what they mean. It is for me, I viewed it as like a stylistic choice and less of a in-universe change of any sort between fat sabers and skinny sabers. So I like that one for that reason. And I liked the exchange between Thrawn and Morgana, for the Empire and for Dathomir. That was really, really nice for those characters to give them a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jonathan could hear, you, sir, have a method, not a system or anything resembling a process.
That's why I want on a t-shirt.
Yeah. I'll tell you a secret. Being a Jedi isn't about wielding a lightsaber. Train your mind, train your body, and trust in the Force. Ahsoka. That's Ahsoka to Sabine?
Yep.
Okay. And then Thrawn, of course. Rain hellfire upon them. There will be no negotiating with the apprentice of Anakin Skywalker. So he's really got a Woody about Anakin Skywalker, too. Perhaps this is where a Ronin such as you belongs. Today, victory is mine. Long live the Empire. And then Ahsoka at the end says to Sabine, Ezra is where he needs to be, and so are we. As she notices her bird, as Jonathan had mentioned.
I think one thing I just wanted to flag, maybe just a quick note to Ezra, that if you're finally back after all this time and you land in an Imperial ship, maybe step out with the helmet off. Just putting that out there. Maybe step out with the helmet off as opposed to wearing the full Night Trooper uniform when you step onto the flight deck of the Rebel ship or the New Republic ship. Probably not the safest maneuver.
Yeah. He's lucky that Chopper recognized him like a puppy.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Immediately knew it was him.
Yeah. And I like when he assembled his own lightsaber. We didn't really talk about that earlier, how he goes at the beginning and assembles his own lightsaber so that he and Sabine each have their own now. And he, not only does he create a new one, but he uses a part that is the matching one to Kanan. And then he also makes a blue lightsaber like Kanan's. So now he's sort of more the knight as opposed to the Padawan.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. From an Easter egg hunt, I think the title is an homage to The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe from the Chronicles of Narnia. The pattern just fits too well. I was also thinking about some things like Kanan Jarrus as Caleb is arguably an Easter egg here. Mm-hmm. Not just mentioning him, but the fact that his name is Caleb when Hu Yang knew him. And I really did find that Sabine's Force moment, the first one when she's getting choked out by one of the zombie troopers, is kind of similar to the out of necessity moment that Luke has when he's captured by the Wampa on Hoth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good pull.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that you finally make that connection to the Force when you need it the most.
Yeah, you have no choice but to let go and just hope, and then it sort of clicks for you.
Right. Well, we have one more show for you folks, and that is Loki is back for season 2, episode 1, Ubaros, or Obius, I think Loki calls him. Do you have an elevator pitch here, Jaime?
I was in a mood, apparently, when I wrote this. I said, Loki keeps on slipping into the future and the past.
Yeah. Ooh, dialing in a little Steve Miller Band. Very nice. Mm. Yeah, I had, it can be hard to hear the truth no matter when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was interesting show, like from the point of view of the bouncing around that he's doing.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that it really picks up right after we left this character, these characters, right? We kind of weren't sure if we were going to sort of where we were going to jump back in, but it just picks up right when we left off. And I think we were meant to think that at the end of last season that Loki goes back to the TVA and time has been rewritten and they don't know who he is. So he's either gone back to the future or he's gone back to the present. But it then turns out in the very beginning of this, he's gone back to the past. That's why they don't know who he is, which seemed a little bit weird. I don't think that was clear what had happened at the end of last season. I don't know if that was like retcon or if that was just what they always intended to do, but it seemed a little weird.
Right. Yeah, it did. It did sort of seem odd. But then when he starts bouncing around forward, backward, and they can see it. But the other thing, too, is I think we also had Ant-Man Quantumania in here, which gave a lot more exposure to what's the name of the bad dude?
Kang.
Oh, Kang, he who shall not be named.
Yeah, that's what they call him in this thing. But
the one who remains.
The one who.
Remains. Oh, that's right. That's right. He's the one who remains.
Yeah, and he's actually hiding in this one too, because when Loki uses the disruptor stick or whatever it's called to break the wall to show that he's behind, his statue is behind the wall, been glossed over, I guess. Right.
Yeah.
Did he go back to the past and he saw that the?
Yep.
Big the war room that we're in had his face there.
Yeah, so I think he's discovering truths in the past, and then he goes to back to the present or future, and that's where he has to explain to people, no, you've been lied to, no, you've had your brains wiped, no, I've seen the past, and this is not, you know, you're all being duped, right?
Yeah, I like the timey-wimey back and forth with Obi, you know, like where he's like, that's impossible, you can't do that, and then you see Loki flashes the back to the past and then tell him something in the past. And then in the current time, he's like, wait a minute. And then all of a sudden the thought comes to him that what he resolved in the past, he's now remembered, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny how he just kept, there was like a four-part conversation over two periods of time. It was very funny.
Yeah. So what else? What do you have for pew pew?
I put Inside the Loom, I thought was a really cool set piece.
Yeah,
it was really neat.
Yeah, that's what I had. Where Mobius goes inside and is trying to like pull him out, and has the, I mean, it just has that wonderful neo future, you know, special effects that they had from last season, where it's kind of like 1970s sci-fi kind of feel to it, with the big, huge hose attached to him at the back and stuff, and then special effects where they were pretty on point, and I thought that was a really good scene, and then. I like when he's getting all dressed up and he's like, is that a crack on the screen? He slaps the duct tape on the front of
it. Yeah. 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 And don't worry, you're just going to lose your skin, right?
which he does, you know, in the dust of the control room, he does write in, you know, skin question mark, which I thought was just a fun thing, but it actually was a way for Loki to realize where he was. Mm-hmm. Right. He's like, oh, well, I must be in the future here because I can see that skin has been written in this dust here.
Right. Yeah. Not that there would be more dust on there to cover it up over the time, but oh well.
And from a set design standpoint, going into the loom, and I did pause the TV so I could get the exact quote, on the floor leading into the loom right before it is danger. Temporal radiation levels escalate exponentially beyond this threshold. Likelihood of spaghettification increases 7,000%. Proceed with caution, which is a nice little thing because they did mention the getting spaghettified.
My life goal, not to get spaghettified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have Easter eggs here?
I only grabbed one. I mean, I don't know if you have any.
The floor warning and the skin were my two Easter eggs that I wrote down.
Yeah.
The one that I caught was from the mid-credit scene that where we finally see more of Sylvie, right? She ends up showing up in 1982 in Broxton, Oklahoma, and walks into the McDonald's, right? And Broxton, Oklahoma is immediately a twinge for comic readers because there is a very notable arc of the comics where after the destruction of Asgard in Ragnarok, not exactly the same as the comic book and in the comic book as it is in the movie, but still same premise, basically Asgard of old is destroyed. It is reborn as a city floating about 15 feet above the surface of Brockton, Oklahoma. And that is where Asgard, the city, lives for a number of years in the Marvel comics. Whether or not that has anything to do with anything, or it was just a fun little Easter egg for the fans, I'll be curious to see how that plays out. But Broxton is a name known to comic book readers.
Cool.
Also great deja vu reading those old McDonald's signs.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sort of iconography of McDonald's and its interior design of the era was like immediately something I picked up on.
Yeah, I missed that scene. I did watch the credits, but I wasn't paying attention, I guess.
Yeah, it basically, they go through the whole sort of retro credits and stuff, and then they show that scene, and then they show the full credits at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's not long. It's maybe a minute.
Yeah. I may have seen it. I just didn't register. Anywho, cool.
I did have a quote that I wanted to mention between Mobius and Loki, where Loki's describing what happened with the one who remains and having to fight Sylvie. And Mobius like, well, I'd ask who won, but it was a draw. You both kicked each other through time doors simultaneously, just calling him out on his ego lie there of like, no, it wasn't a draw. You lost. You got kicked out.
Yeah. And Mobius, a couple of quotes here, John put down. It looks terrible. It's like you're being born and dying both at the same time. It's freaking me out. And then a little while later, he says, when he's trying to explain, or Loki's trying to explain something to him, he tells him his mind's been wiped. He says, I have no memory of my mind being my memory wiped. And Liv, what's the quality of life with no skin? He talks about losing the skin. Yeah. And you have about an hour, boom, there, and you hear a boom, and then he goes, you have about 5 minutes, that's Obi says. Get ready to see some hoofing like you've never seen before, Mobius says. I guess that's when he's coming back to the...
Yeah, it's when he's talking to Obi, when he's just about to walk out the door to the loom, yeah. So my big question was, should this have been a two-part premiere? I know it's only 6 episodes for the entire second season, but do you feel like we kind of got far enough here? Like, is there enough tease to make... I mean, obviously you're going to keep watching. We're going to keep watching. We always keep watching. But... do you feel like there was enough hooking to pull you in to want to see a second episode? Like, I feel like I didn't really get a real flavor of what they're relying on you liking the first season to want to watch episode two.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's the key here is I think if you came into the series with just this show, you might be like, I mean, there's enough timey-wimey stuff there, but you'd be like, why is Loki going through this? And, you know, they have the recap at the beginning to sort of catch you up if you trying to jump in on a show in the middle, but I think more and more these shows with long arcs, you have to go back to the very beginning and start again, right? Yeah, I don't think it would be very successful just jumping in.
Yeah, I think it's more of a recap and a reset sort of episode that I think you're right does heavily rely on you having enjoyed and watched the first season.
But it was like Legion was like that too. Legion was very sort of, you know, in the second or third season, whatever it was, you had to know what went on in the first two to begin to really get a sense of where you were, right?
Mm-hmm. And I do think the sort of meta out of universe thing is that, you know, with the actor strike still ongoing and the writer strike having just ended, I think we're going to see a lot of these shows try to stretch things out. I know that Gen V for Amazon did actually drop 3 episodes, which actually surprised me and kind of intimidated me. So I've not watched that one. Surprised that they did that versus trying to tease it out and stretch it out a little bit longer with the episodes. But I did kind of wonder if, to Jonathan's point, if the reason they didn't do a 2-episode premiere here was because then you don't have as much content to back it up.
Yeah, that would make sense. Because I don't, honestly, beyond Loki, I don't know what's next for the Disney Plus machine. We don't have anything specifically slated other than we know November is going to have some Doctor Who, but we don't know when. But there's no more Marvel, there's no more Disney, there's no more nothing on the plate. There's still an actor strike going on out there. So yeah, maybe this is just their way of saying, you know what, you're gonna get this over 6 weeks. We need 6 weeks worth of content and subscription dollars.
Good point. Cool. Well, let's move on to the watch list if we're done with Loki.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple of things here. The Pod Generation, which I saw, I don't know how I ended up with this trailer, but stars, what's her name now? The woman from Emily Clark. It's a sci-fi movie about a couple who decide that they're going to have a baby, and the way they do the babies in this future, the near future, not now, but is you raise the baby in a pod and you wear it on you wear it like it's basically like a pregnant woman's belly, but you have a harness, you wear it so the husband can wear it, the wife can wear it, and, you know, madness ensues. Sort of a sci-fi comedy, I guess, right? It looks interesting. And then Argyle is one I stumbled across too, which is an agent Argyle. It's sort of it's like a fictitious character, Agent Argyle, and it's you see him in, you know, doing a dance almost out of Pulp Fiction with the femme fatale. But I think they're dancing to Let's Dance by David Bowie. And as you watch the trailer, you realize that it's actually not really a real situation. It's actually, and of course, the guy who played Superman plays Agent Argyle. What's his name again?
Henry Cavill?
Henry Cavill, yeah. He plays Agent Argyle. And it turns out to be a story actually written by Bryce Dallas Howard. And she's talking to her mother, who's played by Catherine O'Hara, about this she's a, you know, famous writer of this character, Argyle. And in the trailer, she comes across a fan who she says, "Oh, and what do you do?" And he says, I'm actually deal in espionage. And so he starts, you know, killing people and fighting them on the train, like you sort of a Bourne situation kind of thing, right? And ends up taking her along with it. And the premise of the show is that she's such a good writer that she's actually writing things that become true. So the crime world is waiting for her to write her next chapter so they can figure out how this ends, sort of thing. So it's sort of a play on, you know, is this in her mind? You know, is this kind of like, we'll have to see how it goes. It's going to be on Apple TV. It's got quite the cast, so we'll have to see where it goes. What do you got, Jaime?
I had a couple of picks here from a nostalgia standpoint. The Beanie Bubble on Apple TV Plus about the Beanie Baby craze in the 90s was kind of fun. I think it's kind of, how do I feel about this movie?
Is it a movie or a show?
It is it's a movie.
Oh, okay.
It is, I feel kind of flawed as a movie. Like, I feel like there's really nice production work. I don't know that it's one I would highly recommend unless you sort of grew up or are very interested in the era, which is why I put, you know, for the nostalgia as the sort of disclaimer. But the acting in it from, like, oh my goodness,
Zach Galifianakis.
Zach Galifianakis as the one of the co-founders, and Elizabeth Banks and several others. Like, the actors really take the material and elevate it. So it's probably like a C or D movie that they elevate to like B level, if that helps you. So I thought that was one that might be worth watching. It was one that said, oh yeah, I remember Beanie Babies, and just learning the weird sordid history of how that became a thing where, you know, couples divorcing would like have the Beanie Babies laid out in a courtroom and then have to decide how they're, you know, equitably distributing these now essentially worthless beanbag doll toys.
Mm-hmm. It sounds a little bit like what they did with the Tetris movie, right? It sort of went back and told the sort of weird story of how Tetris came to the market. That was an Apple TV mm-hmm. Plus series as well, or a movie as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And BlackBerry to a certain extent as well.
Yeah.
It's sort of these, you know, historical fiction or whatever.
I think that's a good way of putting it, because there are definitely people who are like, well, this didn't actually happen. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's not meant to be a history class, right? So I think that, you know, fictionalizing some things, I listen to Business War is a podcast where, you know, they'll deal with historical things, and their disclaimer is like, hey, we try to base as much of this on the real world as possible, but we can't possibly know what happened on that phone call that we know happened, because there's court records that, you know, so-and-so called so-and-so. So the dramatization makes it more entertaining. And I think it's the same thing here, where I'm sure some people who lived through, you know, who are these characters are real people in real lives, they'll probably have quibbles with it, but it's not about learning the exact history. It's not a history class. It is, entertaining ourselves with the dramatization of stuff that actually happened. So looking at it through that lens, I think is helpful.
Yep.
Yeah.
My second one, because 'tis the season, as we are in the spooky season of October, Chucky season 3 has premiered. And now that I've watched the first episode, I totally understand why I had seen that Chucky promo that kind of looked like a press conference, because the sort of pitch idea for this series or this season seems to be, what if Chucky was in the White House?
So that's, there you go. Weird.
It is very, very strange. And I think they did a pretty good job for this sort of thing. I'm like, okay, I'm with you. I'll take the premise.
I mean, I gotta be honest, given what you folks have done the last number of years, I really don't see it as too far of a stretch, but it is a stretch.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe to be clear, at least in this first episode, Chucky is not president, but he is in the White House, so causing his chaos there.
All right. Well, yeah. All right. Sure.
I feel like inevitably, I have no spoilers for the season, but I feel like inevitably Chucky will somehow be very close to launching the nukes or something. So I'm gonna keep that on the wall and then check that box if I'm correct in my prediction.
I mean, really, if you're gonna do this, why not do that?
Right? Why wouldn't you? Yeah. You'd have to. Feels like a necessity.
Yeah, it really does. It really does.
Sorry, typing.
All right, my pick this week was something Jaime mentioned earlier, which was the Boys spinoff Gen V. They've dropped the first 3 episodes all at once, and then new episodes are dropping on Thursday. So I have now seen half of the episodes, 1 through 4 out of 8. If you're a fan of The Boys, I think you will probably like this very much. It is a really clean extension of that world. The idea is that this is set inside the university where the kids who have been injected with Compound V go to learn how to do the different things that they do in their The Boys universe. So some of them will go on to be crime fighters, some of them go on to be reality TV stars, and Godolkin University, or God U, is where they go and learn. And this season is set around sort of this big mystery of, you know, what lurks beneath the school, which of course is a great trope. We've seen that in Buffy and lots of other series over the years, but it definitely fits in. It's very much the same sense of humor. It's over the top. It's gross. It's sexual. If you are a fan of those things, you will probably enjoy this very much. It's a pretty easy watch. It's not necessarily a cerebral show, I will say. It's you know, it's pretty easy to just sort of sit and watch people, you know, make dirty jokes and drug references and blow each other up and stuff like that. But I enjoyed the first 4 episodes. I'm definitely in for the rest, and especially in the absence of the Real Boys series, which I think has a little bit more to say about this world. I think it's really good. Really enjoyable.
I think we talked about them before, this show before, right?
I think we talked that it was coming, but it just dropped last week.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, Jonathan, people want to get in touch with you. Where would they find you?
You can find me on Twitter or X and Instagram as @JPKNews, or on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
And you, Jaime?
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
All right, my name is Timitra, TimMitra, on the Twitter machine is where you'll find me. And so until next week, we'll see you in the future. Or next time, I guess I should have said. All right.
Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
night, children.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm getting into my spooky Halloween season voice now.
Yep.
Ugh. I went through an entire pack of Halls and a large glass of water and a full box of Kleenexes to get through this.
Yeah. I'm always taking Ricola during the show because my throat gets all beklempt.
Yeah. I'm so happy that my daughter's back in school, but oh my God, whatever she brought home is going to be the death of me.
Where is she at? High school?
Yes. Yeah. She went back, started back in high school a week and a half ago. So very happy for that, but also, ugh, gross. Tis the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to sign off because I don't have much left. So.
All right.
All right. We'll reconnect next week and we'll figure out what we're going to do.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you later.
Later.
Take care,
guys. Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.